Opinions expressed on this program do not necessarily reflect that of the staff and management of Good Karma Brands, but are the sole responsibility of the host and guests of this particular show.
America may have many, many days, but they will be full of trouble. There will be no rest. There will be no tranquility in this country. Until a nation comes to terms with our problems.
Bringing you social and political commentary from his mouth to your ears. Breaking down the issues which matter to you.
You are not put here to be a white man's footstool. You are put here to represent the very best in God's word.
Legendary civil rights icon, the Reverend Jesse Jackson in the studio. Reverend Jackson, how are you?
Mr. Reverend, good morning on this chilly Milwaukee morning.
And I am pleased to have one of the founding members of the Black Panther Party, Chairman Bobby Seale. Mr. Chairman, how are you this morning?
Good morning. I'm doing just fine. Thank you.
From Mr. Eric Holder. Mr. Holder, so good to see you. How are you?
Well, I'm fine, man. How you been? It's been a long time. I haven't seen you for a while.
The Dr. Cornell West. Dr. West, how are you, sir?
My dear brother, you're so kind, you're so generous, so man, but I salute you and the work that you were doing there. Doing a magnificent job there in Wisconsin.
Stream live on 1017thetruth.com. Call in with your questions or comments. 833-212-1017. Join us on social media at 1017thetruth. It may not be what you expect to hear, but I will definitely give you what you need to know. Are you ready for the truth?
Truth! You can't handle the truth!
Now, live from the American Family Insurance Studio at The Avenue in the heart of downtown Milwaukee, here is Sherwin Hughes.
Good morning, welcome to the program. Today is Thursday, September 22nd, 2022. As an African American man, I've got to be very much aware of not just my emotions, but how my emotions are perceived by other people. There is still very much a perception that sticks to me because America itself, America's history, the media, television, movies, all of those things has painted a picture of me that seems to stick. It's the unusual thing about being a minority that white people in this country are going to find out very, very soon. The actions of one of us speaks for the whole. Where when you are in the majority, the actions of one person in the majority race community is an individual person. They have the benefit, or dare I say, the privilege of individuality. But see, black folks, we're all the same. We're all together. We're all a community. When black people speak, we speak for all of us. I wish that we had the benefit of individuality. Now, all of us clearly are individuals, and I just wish we could get to a point, and maybe we will, where the actions of a single African American does not represent the whole. So if a black man gets angry because, you know, he's human, we don't then say and think and fashion our politics around angry black men. If a black man commits a crime, we are not all criminals. And I don't believe that that is too much to ask. It's crazy, y'all. Because even if you have a prototype, a middle-aged white man who has an affection for far-right politics that gets a gun and goes and shoots up a public place, we don't say nor fashion our politics around every other middle-aged white man who may vote for Republican candidates and just assume that they are mass shooters. We don't do that. Middle-aged white men, if anything, they have the benefit to say, well, I'm a businessman. I own property. I'm an investor. I went to college. I live in the suburbs. But an African-American who commits a crime criminalizes all of us. And it's not that I am trying to ignore the fact that we are a community and we are judged as such. But it can be extremely inconvenient. Because America's got a very myopic view of blackness and black people. They take a couple of examples, and that applies to all of us. Think about how complicated civil rights is, the fight, the struggle, the political component to civil rights in this country. Not just the 1960s, but going back to the 1860s. The real civil rights leaders were newly freed black men, the first thing they wanted to do was cast votes. And we ran for office and we won. That is the original civil rights struggle. But when you talk about civil rights, it's only Dr. King. It's only I Have a Dream. It's only bits and pieces of what people think they know about nonviolence. So when they see black people, especially black men, acting in a way that shows, you know, human emotion, what do they say? You know what they say to us. Well, Dr. King wouldn't like this. You're being very violent. Why are you burning down your own communities? They only can see one version of us, a version of us that is palatable, a version of us that is still subservient, a version of us that they still believe that they can control. There has been this deep and ingrained fear, and I think this is where a lot of whiteness comes from. Now, remember, y'all, listening to my show, you got to put your thinking cap on every morning. So you need to make sure you get your little coffee by 9:30, get you a couple of sips in, maybe your first cup by 9:45, because when I hit the airwaves at 10:02, it's go time. Got to follow along now. There has always been this deep ingrained fear, which has been the gasoline that fires up the 8-cylinder engine that is whiteness, not white people. White people are interesting and curious and normal human beings, but it's this whiteness, it's the shield that they put on that they believe protects them. Protects them from what? Us. They know what they did to us. And they're scared that we might get mad at them and take some kind of revenge. And so they form this bond amongst one another to protect one another from us. It is the driving force that keeps whiteness and white supremacy alive. Their fear of us. That tells you everything you need to know. Including the images of us. If you're watching some of these commercials, some of these ads, these political ads, holy smokes. Oh, it's heating up. It's getting hot now. Ads against Tim Michaels, ads against Tony Evers. So what they are starting to do, the Republicans, they're putting Tony Evers and Mandela Barnes together as these dangerous, defund the police Democrats that don't take crime seriously. And it's starting to work. And it's terribly unfortunate. It's starting to work because you associate Democrats with black and brown people. You associate brown people with being pro-criminal and anti-police. It is the lowest common denominator, is it not? It makes a lot of sense to a lot of white folks in this state who still vastly outnumber us. It makes sense to them. So you just go with the thing. The stereotypical thing that makes the most sense to the plurality of voters in this state. Here is what is disappointing to me. And y'all got my head a little bit yesterday, a little bit now. I told you I'm going to be interviewing Lieutenant Governor and candidate for the U.S. Senate, Mandela Barnes, on September 29th. It's not in studio. It's going to be a recorded interview. It's going to be on the phone, and it's not when I'm on air, so it won't even be live here. I'm going to have to race home because we don't have these studios quite set up yet for remote interviews. Don't worry, it's coming. So I have to race home because he only has between 1:30 and 1:45, and I was just told yesterday he has a hard out at 1:45, meaning if the interview goes to 1:46, he hangs up. And I'm realizing that the interview that I do with him for 15 minutes, it's not long enough. It's not going to touch on the topics that are most important to the people that need to be able to identify with Mandela Barnes. Not liberal, progressive, lefty white folk, the black community from which he came. So I don't have enough time to establish the necessary credibility that he needs to get us comfortable with him. And maybe that shouldn't be the point. Maybe I should just be pro Mandela and just throw him softball questions and make him as palatable to as many people as possible. But remember earlier I said that we as black people, we're all judged by the actions of one or a few, and that we are a connected community whether we want to be or not. We do not yet have the privilege and the benefit of individuality. The version of Mandela Barnes that is palatable to voters in this state, remember, who are 90+ percent white, is not the version of black folks that we want to promote. He just doesn't represent us. But I get it. Politics changes you a little bit. Sometimes you can't be authentic, or some people think they can't be authentic. We got to change that, because if we are putting African-Americans in very prominent positions, and make no mistake, the U.S. Senate is a national position. Mandela Barnes, if he is so fortunate to beat Ron Johnson, meaning he would be doing something that Russ Feingold couldn't do twice. And Russ Feingold got elected to the U.S. Senate in 1992. I was a kid when Russ Feingold first got elected, and Ron Johnson beat Russ twice. If Mandela gets elected, then there will be national attention focused on who he is, where he came from, his demeanor, how he carries himself, and they will judge African-Americans in the state of Wisconsin. Because remember, in this state, we aren't just a minority. We are a hyper minority in this state. So they're going to look at him, and then they're going to see all of us. And I don't know if that sits well with me. And the interview that I'm scheduled to do with him on the 29th is not going to showcase who we are. We have to live through him. And I don't know if he's the best representation of us. So y'all got me over here rethinking the whole interview. I'm torn. Do I do the interview and promote it and run it here on 101.7 The Truth so more people can hear from him? Or do I say, nope, not until you can actually be here at the studio at this black radio station in person, where we can have a one-on-one, in-depth, non-scripted conversation? I don't know what to do. I'm torn. Because then if he loses, then everybody going to come out the woodwork and say, Sherwin, you should have interviewed him. You should have did it. I have between now and the 29th to discuss. When I come back from this brief intermission, I want to talk about Cavalier Johnson sticking up to a Republican candidate for attorney general. See, that's what I want to see. I want to see African-American men in leadership who are not just going to cower when they are placed under scrutiny, especially from Republicans. See, that's what we need to see. America needs to see that we too share emotion and we are very passionate. And you can't just kick us around because we might be disproportionately poor. We don't have the highest levels of education. Our median incomes are lower. We have lower rates of home ownership. You cannot disrespect or demean a whole community because of those things. We're going to have to start fighting back and promoting and showing America who we really are, not just passive and timid because we're afraid of the stereotype that we are angry and emotional. Well, we are angry and emotional, and rightfully so. You are listening to The Truth with Sherwin Hughes on the new 101.7 FM. Don't go anywhere. I'll be right back.
It's The Truth with Sherwin Hughes on 101.7 The Truth app, and 1017thetruth.com.
I'm ready for this weekend. This week has been a whirlwind, I tell you what. Don't you worry about your boy. We starting to get all settled in here now. Things are going good. Yesterday, your boy was a deer in the headlights. Now I'm still a deer, but I'm avoiding the headlights now. We're going to be all right. All right, so I'm concerned about our image as African Americans, because somebody needs to be concerned about it. And there's other ways in which people can determine or decipher who the black community is. We're very diverse. We are all individuals, even though we may not be seen collectively as an individual. So we still have African Americans who are achieving first. You know, the first black person to get an award or some kind of a recognition, or the first African American to get this job or to be the CEO of this particular company. And we celebrate that collectively. That is the community aspect of who we are. But that was that person's individual accomplishments and their work ethic, et cetera. But we celebrate it because we're all in this together. We're supposed to be supportive of one another. Now, doesn't mean that we're always going to agree. There's a lot of different definitions of what blackness is. And what hurts me probably more than anything else is when we promote this image, because we think it gets us something. We think it gets us more attention, more sympathy, maybe more resources. I don't know, that we're all just broken down and beat up and the police is killing us and we just can't get a fair shake. Every day we leave the house, we got to fear for our lives. I mean, yes, there is some of that, but that is not overwhelmingly what the black experience is in Milwaukee. And I found out from y'all when I asked y'all last week or last month, I don't know what the old radio station that we don't work at no more. I said, how do you rate being black? The lowest I saw, I mean, it was pretty low. It was a 3, but it was because this one guy had 2 bad instances with the police over his 50-year lifespan. He said, I rate being black as the 3 because twice I had some issues with the police. I'm thinking to myself, they didn't kill you. So, I mean, yeah, it might have been uncomfortable and inconvenient, but you can't rate your whole black experience based upon just 2 encounters with the police. But you know what everybody else said? They said an 8 or better. So being black is not woe is me. So we need to stop doing that, promoting that woe is me. And we need help and we need the money and the reparations because we just can't do nothing. No, black people can do anything and we do everything quite well, might I add. Got to stop that. Makes us look weak. It is in my best interest to promote African-American strength. And not like brutish strength, not thuggish, violent strength, like people need to be intimidated by us because we all have guns and we shoot everything. But respect us because we are intelligent and we have developed coping mechanisms to get by in this society, to move from point A to point B that most people never know anything about. If you take a hard day for a 60-year-old African-American man who has been discriminated against, who has been treated unfairly at work, who's probably had a bad encounter or two by the police, and you take all of those experiences, right, and you ask a white person of the same age to compare one of their bad days to the African-American man's bad day, and you will find out quickly there is no comparison. There are things that we have to develop to be able to survive and to thrive in this society. Because America is thrown everything it has at us to stifle our success, and we still thrive. And so now, as we talk about things like diversity, equity, and inclusion, when you want an African-American on your board or in your office or in your C-suite, you want that African-American, not just because of the color of their skin, because the coping mechanisms that they had to develop being black in this country is fantastic for your corporate bottom line. Because you've got a whole office full of folks who never had to develop those same kind of coping mechanisms. Believe it or not, America has trained us for business. The corporate world is the most cutthroat thing I've ever seen in my entire life. I believe we are better equipped for it than anybody else. So those of you who are looking at DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion, and how you can factor it in, get an African-American with real experience that's lived a real life, maybe been in trouble with the police, maybe been racially profiled a few times. How they were able to survive and persevere through that is worth something. Now, here's the other thing. Now you got to pay them what they're worth. Got to give them some money now. As far as promoting our strength, I think we need to have a different level of respect for different flavors of blackness. And I don't like when we judge one another. No, this person ain't black enough. This person is too this, this is too that. We need to be supportive because the white folks support each other come hella high water. They didn't like what Donald Trump said, but I bet you they fell in line, didn't they? We are a little bit too selective in what we consider authentically black. Maybe we need to begin by respecting our own individuality as individual black people. There is no one definition of black, but we do have collective experiences, and that should be enough. You shouldn't have to act in a stereotypical way to earn the pride of being black or accepted by your community. I want to be much more supportive of African-American elected officials, and I want to try my damnedest. But it's hard for me to just be objective, especially when I know that the African-American community needs a lot of things from this political system. We don't vote just because it's a cool thing to do. We vote for advancement. You got other cultures and communities that vote for our depression. We vote for our advancement. So it's really, really important for us. But there are different flavors and styles of blackness. And even in those different flavors and styles of blackness, some of which I vehemently disagree with, but at the same time, I know that they have similar experiences than I do. I think it's in my best interest and maybe all of our best interest to respect the different types of black that there is so we can make progress in different arenas. Because some black personalities are not going to make it in the corporate world. Sorry, it ain't for you. You better off just being an entrepreneur and starting your own business because you ain't going to do too well in a field of cubicles. Some versions of black are better suited to Wall Street, some Main Street, some entrepreneurship. Some better suited to maybe being in the classroom, some being mentors, some being teachers, some being professors. But all of those definitions need to work together. I'm actually proud of the mayor. I know that we have had a variety of conversations about him. Quite honestly, he may come up on one of our shows every single day. But not necessarily because he's doing good things or being a proper representation of us. But I like how he fired back at this Republican candidate for attorney general. Because you know they like to beat up on Milwaukee because they think that we're weak. Because we're poor and we have all this crime. It's really because we're a majority minority city. That is really what they're doing when they're beating up on us. Because a lot of those attacks on us stick. Especially when you have black leadership. So if you attack Milwaukee, you're attacking all the black leadership. Because people are very simple. We're overthinking things sometimes. If you have a lot of black leadership in Milwaukee and Milwaukee is not doing well, especially when it comes to the money that we need to keep this city afloat, to make sure we have all of the resources to make this city not just survive but thrive, and you've got black leadership everywhere, they can just talk about the whole collective failure of Milwaukee, all the poverty, all the crime, all the poor outcomes from the school, and they can make that a direct reflection of two things, Democratic leadership and black leadership. So it's this double-edged sword in which they attack us. We see the nuances of it. You can't just have a blanket attack on the city of Milwaukee and then blame all the black leadership. What Milwaukee is right now was inherited from white folks. So if anything is screwed up, quite honestly, the biggest screw-ups in this country have always been white folks. But once we take the mantle of leadership, well, everything is your fault, even though we kept you out of leadership for 227 years. Now that you're in leadership, all of it is your fault. We got to push back on that. And when they attack our city or one of our black elected leaders, even if you don't agree with that elected leader, even if you think they're too weak, whatever your personal feelings are, we have to come together and defend this place. Because if we don't, nobody will. We're not just going to sit here and let them attack us, or at least I'm not. Milwaukee is not your punching bag after Republican Attorney General candidate criticizes city budget. Mayor Cavalier Johnson pushes back. Good for you, Chevy. In fact, when I think about it, the grand scheme of American politics right now, where you have a political party, which is far from perfect, and then you have one that promotes fascism. Okay? Republicans should not be allowed to represent anyone anywhere until they can push back on everything that is Donald Trump, this cult of personality demagogue. Republicans should not be allowed to represent people. I've invested too much of my life in this country to see one political party fall into the doldrums of fascism. And so if someone who's running as a Republican wants to punch Milwaukee, we're going to punch back. And if anything, the biggest criticism against Attorney General Tony, or D.A. Tony, rather, is that he's running as a Republican. Let's talk to Corey. You're on the new 101.7 The Truth. How are you?
I'm doing pretty well. And yourself?
I'm doing okay.
Hey, thank you, man, for taking my call. I mean, I've been listening to you, man, since WNOV, man, way back in the day.
Thank you so much.
I'm the gentleman who rated a 3. However, I want to clarify that you didn't read the entire text message.
Oh, that was you. We was talking about that a minute ago. Okay.
Yeah, man, that's me, man. So I just want to clarify that my overall experience with the police is a 3. However, me being black is a 10, and I wouldn't change it for the world. You didn't read my entire text message, and I know you referred to the 3 a few times that I heard since you read the text message a few weeks ago.
Yeah, I got stuck on that 3. I got mad when I seen that, especially because I got so many other 8s. But we wasn't rating the police. Interaction with the police is probably rated at a 1, but my experience being black is a 900.
Exactly, man. And I confirm that for myself, man, that my experience as a black man in this country, I don't walk around with a chip on my shoulder, man. I handle my business and I treat people well. And I do what I'm supposed to do as a human being, as a black man. So it's a 10 for me, man. So, hey, man, I don't want to hear you say that 3 anymore, man. Let's get that straight, man.
Done. No more 3s. A 10 from this point forward.
Now, with the police, that's a 3 all day. So thank you very much, man. You all have a good day. And, Kerry, you sound nice on the phone. Appreciate y'all.
Thank you, Corey. Appreciate that. And Kerry appreciates that. I'm glad he clarified, because I don't know. I was bothered by that. I felt good when I was talking to y'all that particular day, because I was over here thinking that, wow, black folks must really hate being black. We must collectively feel like it's a curse. It's not. It's beautiful. It's a series of experiences that we try to show the rest of the world through our music, through our culture, through our art, just how we interact with the world. Like, y'all can't see the beauty in it. You know what it is? America doesn't want to see the beauty in it because they have so demonized who we are and what we represent. That's why they've erased our history. And really, if you think about African Americans, we only started as slaves, not even as real human beings, because they just can't figure out how and why we can still love who we are. They just don't get it because they've tried everything they possibly could to get us to hate us. Now, they've had some success. Now, there is some self-hatred in our community, but that's few and far between. But we try to show America that, yeah, the experience of being black, as tough as it may be, is an average. It is an 8 out of 10. I wonder, how do white folks rate being white nowadays? Because they feel the walls closing in on them. And because they feel the walls closing in on them, or at least their leadership feels those walls closing in, they want to outlaw abortion across the board so that white women, when they get pregnant, they're going to have these babies. You're going to reinforce and boost up the white population. I wonder how white folks rate it. Now, here's the difference between them and us. Oh, it's a lot of white people that listen to this show. There's many. There's a ton. I'm in their earbuds right now, playing in the car speakers on their little commute. Might even be playing on the 1017 The Truth app, which you can download for free from the Google Play Store and the iTunes Store, just to let you know. But they wouldn't dare tell the truth about how they rate being white, because they're seeing black progress and they're seeing black smiles and they listen to black music. There was a, darn it, we don't have any of that. Being white sucks. They always talk about reverse racism, too. I wonder how they would rate being white. So when I come back, I'm going to go a little bit further in depth into how Mayor Cavalier Johnson is showing some strength. He's pushing back on that Republican candidate who's trying to kick Milwaukee around. We ain't show punching bag. Now, the other thing that I'm going to need Mandela to do is stop making peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. And I was just telling my friend yesterday, I love me a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. But if I'm running for the U.S. Senate against Ron Johnson, a pseudo-fascist, I ain't making no peanut butter and jelly sandwich. In fact, if you're going to have Sherwin in a commercial running for the U.S. Senate, put me in some army fatigues with the fruit of Islam behind me. Don't worry, we're going to talk about it. And if you want to talk about it, I got a number for you. You can call it. You can text it. You can do both. It's 833-212-1017, 833-212-1017. You are listening to The Truth with Sherwin Hughes on the new 1017 The Truth, live from the American Family Insurance Studio at the Avenue downtown. I'll be right back.
This is The Truth with Sherwin Hughes on 1017 The Truth, The Truth app, and 1017thetruth.com.
Milwaukee Mayor Cavalier Johnson defended his proposed budget against Republican attacks yesterday, centering on police funding, the latest chapter in a deep and long-standing debate pitting the state against its largest city. As Milwaukee's on pace for a third straight murder record, the mayor of Milwaukee has proposed to defund the police by cutting an additional 17 police officers from the city of Milwaukee's police department, said Attorney General candidate Eric Toney, who currently serves as the Fond du Lac district attorney. He tweeted that on Tuesday night. I call on the mayor of Milwaukee to reconsider his budget proposal and make public safety his number one priority. His comments clearly did not sit well with the mayor, who in April became the first African-American mayor of Milwaukee. And I quote, D.A. Tony, my proposed budget actually increases, all capital letters, funding to the Milwaukee Police Department. If you are not compelling folks in your party, which controls the legislature, to provide funding to adequately support public safety, then you're not serious about public safety either, Johnson tweeted. And that was spot on. More from of you of this, Mr. Mayor, more from you on this. We want to hear more. We like that now. We like it. When they limit the amount of revenue that Milwaukee gets and we don't have enough money for essential services and public safety is an essential service, they are playing a political trick on us. It's very sophisticated, but here's what they're going to do. We might need, to use a round number, $250 million to fully fund our police department and to add new officers and to have crisis response teams and do all this other stuff, all the amenities that a modern society may need when it comes to public safety. So the Republicans in Madison are going to say, we're only going to put together a budget that gives Milwaukee $100 million. Now, they need a quarter billion, but they ain't going to get all that. They're going to get $100 million, and they're going to have to cut staff, going to have to cut positions, going to have to lay off cops. Then the Republicans can say, ooh, look at crime going up, and you got to keep cutting the police. Because most people that are politically engaged do not understand how the budget really is the politics. The money is the politics. You hear people say, follow the money. Follow the Republican legislature's thought process on how they feel about Milwaukee. They know that we've got more people in this city, and urban areas sometimes deal with issues that rural and sparsely populated areas don't deal with. They know that we're an expensive city. They also know that we generate more revenue than anybody else. So what they do is they withhold the money that we need to be a first-class city that is 100% safe. Because if Milwaukee is doing well, then what is that? That's a feather in the cap for Democrats. That's a feather in the cap for black people, black executives, black legislators. And they can't have that. So they have to make us look bad so they can beat up on us. But see, here's the thing. People getting smart now. We getting smart. We know how to read. We got the internets. You ain't going to punk us around no more. Speaking of someone who's not going to get punked around no more, let's talk to Bob. You're on the new 101.7 The Truth. How are you, sir?
Hello. Can you hear me?
I can hear you perfectly.
Okay. I mean, your system don't say nothing on the phone when to listen to you. It's different, and it rings when it comes on. It's a good system. You said about how people are, you know, they look at two or three blacks like that's how they are. Well, I hate to say this, but, you know, so I don't want nobody else to do it, but I was at the casino, and I gamble responsibly now because that's a weakness. Temptation, I can handle that. Like a pretty lady like Carrie or a pretty woman in Milwaukee, I can handle temptation. But weakness, I need God to help me, and he helped me with the casino. This guy, I was end up talking to him. 19 years old, he bought his mama a house, and he lost $700. And I said, "You can't pay your rent now, can you?" He said, "No, my rent is paid up for 2 years." The guy owns two houses on your Lake Michigan, worth $300,000 apiece. I mean, it made me very optimistic. And he's your age group that, you know, us young. And then his wife was there. She was.
Wait, how old was he, Bob? I thought you said he was 19. How old is he?
No, well, he's your age now. I mean, he's about 46 or 45. That's how he looked to me.
Oh.
He wasn't my age. I know he was about your age. And that made me optimistic about your age group. Your age group, you know, I mean, this guy bought his mama a house at 19 and owned. My rent's paid up for 2 years. This ain't nothing.
So wait, he bought his mother a house at 19?
Yeah. Now, he might have been lying, but I don't think so. He sounded really serious. I mean, and it rolled off his mouth. And it just made me feel optimistic about, you know, your age group, you know? Your age group made me feel a little lack because rap came out. Now, we had two radio
Bob,
stations.
Bob, what do you think my age group is? What would you consider my age group?
Oh, your age group is in the 40s.
Okay. You know, I'm damn near 50 years old now, so we ain't kids. So when you talk about my age group, you're talking about middle-aged black men that have families and have education and 30 years in the workforce. So, okay. Just want to make sure you're not relegating my age group to children, but all right.
No, and, you know, the only other point that I want to make right quick is rap, when it came out, now there's two stations. There's now, but back then when I was coming up, it was one station, all black station, you know. Now it's two stations. Now your rap group is more powerful than ours, you know, because the RB. But, you know, we still hanging in there. They got to have RB for some reason. And rap seems like to me, this is the only last point I'm making. Fussing, whining, or poetry. If you take music out of it, I'm going to listen to Whitney Houston. I'm going to listen to Luther Vandross. But rap, it's either poetry or it's too vulgar for poetry. If you take the music out, the music, the funky music, is what makes me want to buy a little bit of it or whatever. That's about it, Sharon. I'm not knocking rap, but I'm just we still running. But it makes me feel optimistic about young men in your age bracket for this guy to buy a house at 19, own two houses on Lake Michigan, worth $300,000. And he said, this ain't nothing. Rent paid for 2 years. I mean, it just makes me feel optimistic about your age group.
Well, I'm glad that you met him at the casino, and I'm glad he makes you feel optimistic about our age group, and we appreciate hearing from you, Bob.
All right, you take care now.
All right. Oh, there's so much to unpack there. If you own a house on Lake Drive, that's not $300,000. That's probably closer to $3 million. But who knows? Could be, just conversations around the blackjack table at the casino. But I'm glad Bob feels optimistic about my age group. And on that note, my age group is going to take a little brief intermission. You're listening to The Truth with Sherwin Hughes on the new 101.7 FM. I'll be right back.
You are listening to The Truth with Sherwin Hughes on 101.7 The Truth, The Truth app, and 1017thetruth.com.
I'm glad that the mayor punched back at a Republican candidate for state attorney general. And let's be clear, Eric Toney, who's a Republican who's running to replace Josh Call, is not going to win. The only way that we get a Republican attorney general in this state now is if he calls up Georgia and gets 11,000 votes, but that ain't going to happen. It's insane to me how for a decade or more, Republicans tried to accuse Democrats and Democratic institutions of committing voter fraud. And it literally has been them the entire time committing voter fraud at the absolute highest levels. The mayor says, D.A. Toney, my proposed budget actually increases all capital letters funding to MPD. If you're not compelling folks in your party, which controls the state legislature, to provide funding to adequately support public safety, then you're not serious about public safety. Johnson tweeted on Wednesday, Milwaukee is not your punching bag. A flurry of, quote, tweets and replies ensued after that. And I'm sure they probably got into a sparring match on Twitter. Now, if we can just get Mandela Barnes to punch back, because Ron Johnson is the gift that keeps on giving. There is so much there. But think about this complicated line that a U.S. Senate candidate named Mandela Barnes has to walk. I'd imagine the overwhelming majority of his campaign staff and his campaign consultants are probably white folk. And so white folks, and they're liberal and they're progressive and they probably have black friends and all the other stuff, but they also have a perception of how other white people perceive black candidates. So his campaign is probably communicating that stereotypical perception. You want the black man to appear soft and gentle, and do not ever liberal, conservative, evangelical, progressive, or moderate. You cannot make white people feel guilty for being white. Because I didn't own slaves. It's not my fault. Don't make me be reminded of things that my ancestry did. But y'all remind black folks of everything that we do every single day. And so his campaign is communicating a softer image. Like Ron Johnson is going for his jugular. I mean, he's getting him and hitting him hard on everything from defund the police to getting rid of cash bail. One thing that sticks in political commentary is people's safety and the perception of public safety. If white folks don't feel safe under black leadership, they just won't vote for it. We shouldn't feel safe under the leadership of a U.S. Senate that tried to fraud Wisconsin voters and tried to install a fascist named Donald Trump. And Dwayne, I got your comment here. I'm going to get to that information about Letitia James suing Donald Trump for $250 million. We're going to get into that. But I don't want to set expectations too high about what is going to happen to Donald Trump. And the more that I'm starting to hear and read, because here's the thing, the justice system takes its sweet time, and it should. We want investigations to be thorough. And the more time they take, the more things are revealed, and hopefully the things that are being revealed as it pertains to Trump and his various empires, more facts come out, and those facts very well could be prosecutable. So the things that Donald Trump did, he did them quickly. He did them in lightning and caused a tremendous amount of damage in 4 years. Investigations may take that long or even longer if we want to be thorough. But in the grand scheme of things, and at the end of the day, what we will see is Donald Trump is mostly untouchable. And I hate to admit it because I want y'all to think this justice system works, because we as black folks, we know the justice system works when it comes to us. If we commit criminal offenses, major to minor, there are penalties and they are real, long lasting and permanent, quite honestly. But for other people in other positions that have a certain type of status and wealth, let alone a combination of the two, plus whiteness, they are untouchable. Donald Trump is not going to jail. Remember when he said he could kill somebody in New York? Y'all remember that? I could kill somebody in Fifth Avenue. He wasn't kidding. The plethora of financial crimes and emoluments clauses violations that this man committed is staggering. Like one offense that Donald Trump may have committed when he was president could warrant tens of thousands of pages of investigations and wiretaps. But I think at the end of the day, he's going to be mostly untouchable. And that's not something I feel happy talking about, because in America, I want to believe that no one is above the law. Because if we believe that no one is above the law, then black people could actually get justice. But for some reason, the people that aren't us are above the law, and we seem to be below it. Let's talk to Donald. You're on the new 101.7 The Truth. How are you?
Good morning. Showing up pretty good. I'd like to voice something here. I think Milwaukee is getting a real raw deal here. Ever since Scott Walker got in there, we haven't been getting our fair revenue, and yet there are other cities that have been being able to get, they can raise their taxes and that, and we're just getting screwed. Now this Cavalier Johnson, I voted for him, and I wasn't real enthused, but by George, I will give him credit. He is trying to put out the olive branch. He's trying to work with the Republicans, just like Barack Obama is trying to work with the Republicans when he got in. And their agenda is, okay, right now, do you realize that the the Republicans are sitting on a $5 billion surplus, the way I believe. I could be wrong on this. If I don't know. And they haven't been in session since March. And they claim they're not going to go in session again till the snow flies. Well, you know, where can you get a job of $50,000? I mean, these guys ain't just, you know, it used to be where you would get together and solve problems. Don't the Wisconsin residents deserve better politicians than what we got?
Yes.
You know, let's get to solving problems. You know, my God, you know, and I'm not a big fan of the Tommy Thompson, but you know something? At least he used to have meetings every Monday morning with the Senate and Assembly, and they would try to get stuff done. My God, this is not, I'll tell you, the city of Milwaukee is in bad shape. And they talk about, okay, indirectly, aren't you, you Republicans, aren't you defunding the police when you're sitting on that $5 billion? You're not, that money could go to help Milwaukee. And Milwaukee, hey, Milwaukee's got sport teams. We got opera. We got theater. We got a lot of things here. Why? I just don't understand it. But anyhow, that's my comment, Sherman. And thank you for taking my call. And hey, you're doing a great job. And you are a credit to the community.
Thank you, Donald. I appreciate that. Have a good day.
You too. Thank you.
Donald is spot on. Not because he said I'm a credit to the community, but other things he said. Do you know that Governor Tony Evers has put together budgets that have led to this state? Donald is right. We've got a $4 billion and change surplus. We have more money in the bank account of the state of Wisconsin than we need for all of our services. And so we have this huge surplus. But the Republican-controlled legislature doesn't want Tony Evers to get credit for that surplus, because Tony Evers wants to give some of that money back to you. He wants to reinvest it in communities. He wants to put it back in your pocket with a middle class tax cut. But see, the Republican legislature does not want him to do that, because that's going to make him look good. It's going to make you want to vote for him. So they're not going into session. Now, here's the thing. Because he is the governor, he can call the legislature in a special session. He's going to, so they can figure out a way to stop that or to repeal that 1849 abortion ban. But I need you to know this. And so they're complaining that we've got to lay off police here because we're not getting our fair share of revenue. I'm going to talk about shared revenue in hour two. And I was fortunate enough to listen to bits and pieces of Dr. Ken's show yesterday. Heard a little bit of his conversation on shared revenue. Very good conversation, by the way. But I want to go a little bit further on that. And I also want to talk about Donald Trump and how I don't think he's going to go to prison. The truth was sure when he was to be back for hour two.